Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Indigenous communities across North America are worried about the safety of women and girls. In Canada, cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women are being scrutinized. And some are putting pressure on the Canadian government to take action. What do you think needs to be done to bring justice to these women and their families? Are you trying to get police to pay attention to the disappearance or murder of a woman in your family or community? Join the conversation right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska Native leaders are concerned about custody cases involving Native children after a recent court ruling. As KMBA's Jocelyn Estes reports, they say Native children will be cut off from their families and culture.
Baby Dawn's Yupik grandmother testified she wanted to adopt her, but she didn't file an adoption petition, which would have required help from an attorney. To help keep Native families together, the Indian Child Welfare Act gives preference to Native families in custody cases, but the courts approved an adoption petition by Baby Dawn's non-Native foster parents. Assistant Attorney General Jacqueline Schaefer says the form of the grandmother's request was an issue.
The question in this adoption appeal became, did the grandmother formally seek to adopt the child?
Schaefer says the Alaska Supreme Court was bound by a 2013 U.S. Supreme Court ruling against the Cherokee biological father of baby Veronica. He also had not filed an adoption petition. Alaska Federation of Natives co-chair Anna Hoffman says getting legal assistance in rural Alaska will likely be an insurmountable hurdle to Native families who wish to adopt, making the requirement for an adoption petition a violation of the Indian Child Welfare Act.
What it would mean for these communities is loss of access, continuation of culture, a loss of the sense of community that should be there.
Attorneys for the Native Village of Tununuk may ask the court to reconsider its decision. In Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
The wild rice harvest in the tribal territory of Wisconsin was solid, but a little below normal this fall. As Mike Simonson reports, storms and high water knocked down some of the rice before it could be collected.
About 99% of Wisconsin's wild rice crop grows in the ceded territory of northern Wisconsin. Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Manuman biologist Peter David says they just finished aerial surveys of the rice beds.
Those flights confirmed that it was just a spotty year, especially probably in northwest Wisconsin, where a lot of the high water this spring led to beds not being great.
David says that goes hand in hand with his biggest concern for the future of wild rice, climate change. He says that can lead to more heavy storms and warmer weather, which can cause brown spot disease. That's a big worry because he says wild rice is sustenance in Indian country.
Wild rice was the overall most nutritious food available in this region of the native diet, and people recognize that value. And so people still really enjoy, I think, making it part of their fare. There were times when this was the go-to subsistence food to get tribal members through hard times.
And David says wild rice is important spiritually and culturally.
This goes back to the Anishinaabe's migration story, moving from the East Coast to this part of the world in search, really, of the food that grows on the water. And so when they reach this western Lake Superior region after this long migration, the presence of Manoman beds here in this region signified that that trip is finally over.
David says some tribes are starting programs to encourage young people to take part in the annual rice harvest. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
Two men who officials say were members of the Native mob gang were sentenced Tuesday. The Star Tribune reports Wakanyan MacArthur was sentenced to 43 years and Anthony Cree received a 24-year prison term. Federal authorities say gang members targeted reservations in urban areas in Minnesota and other states, which authorities say included violence and selling drugs. Obama administration cabinet secretaries and other officials discussed reform, economic development, and a number of topics Tuesday in Washington, D.C. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell convened the meeting of the White House Council on Native American Affairs. This was the group's fourth such meeting. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 5th Annual National Tribal Geographic Information Support Conference on November 3rd. Information on services and the conference at ahcnm.org.
Our democracy is a government of the people, for the people. Let's keep it that way. Vote on November 4th. Get registered. Cast your vote. It's that simple. More information at nativenews.net. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kawanic Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. The number of missing and murdered Indigenous women from nations across Canada is alarming. For years, Indigenous people have spoken up about the impact it has had on their nations, especially when it is a close relative that's absent from the circle. Despite all the people who have come forward to share their story, the numbers keep increasing. This has caused many to ask why more and more our Indigenous women are turning up missing or murdered. Some also find themselves asking, will I be next? There are efforts underway to keep Native women safe, and there are a lot of Indigenous peoples who are having a dialogue to talk about what can be done to make sure more lives are not lost. Today, we've invited some Indigenous leaders to our program to share why they care about this issue. We also want you to add your perspective by calling in to our toll-free number, 1-800-996-2848. And what do you think needs to be done to make sure more First Nations women feel safe? And what about our Native nations in the U.S.? Are we talking enough about this issue? And how has this impacted your family or community? And for those of you who have Indigenous roots, do you feel your Native identity makes you a target for rape, physical violence, or murder? Our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. Again, the number to call is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd like to go ahead and bring in our guests. We have Michelle Odette on the line. She's with us today from Ontario, Canada. And Michelle is the president of the Native Women's Association of Canada. And she is also from the Innu tribe. Welcome to our Talking Circle, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Dinashimidna.
And Michelle, thank you for being with us. We also have Wab Canoe with us this hour, and Wab is the Associate Vice President Indigenous at the University of Winnipeg, and he is Anishinaabe. Welcome to Native America Calling, Wab.
Hey, bonjour, miigwech, kibizendayik. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, I want to welcome you in. And again, if it feels more comfortable to call in anonymously today, too, you can, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And first, let's start with addressing the hundreds of families, communities who have lost a loved one and are among the hundreds of missing and murdered. And Wab, what would you like to tell them?
Well, I guess to the families of victims, but... More importantly, I guess, to just all the young women out there who have started paying attention to this issue and have started getting engaged online and through protesting their ACT action, I'd just like to tell them that they're all loved and valued and that we appreciate them very much. And I really want to commit personally, but also as someone who's part of a broader community to bringing justice for the ones that we've lost in our community, and also to make sure that we make sure that all of our young people, especially the young women and girls, are safe and able to reach their full potential in life.
All right. Thanks for that, Wab. And Michelle, anything you'd like to start off with, any message to the families?
Well, first of all, we often thought that it was something only out west in Canada. But in 2001, when a leader called Brown, President Brown, who was nearly elected for Native Women Association of Canada, came back and said, no, there's a situation downtown East Side Vancouver, but also in the Highway of Tears, where lots of our sisters are missing or kidnapped or found dead. Then we realized that it's happening all over Canada. We try to tell the authority, the municipalities, and all the government, and everybody was acting like it didn't happen in their own backyard. And Amnesty International jumped in and did a review, a research called Stolen Sisters. And because of that, we now able to tell the Mother Earth, people around the world, that these tragedies are not only Indigenous women issue, but are Canadian issue, but also human rights issue. So family who were isolated all alone in this situation, now I'm proud to say that there is a social movement so strong in Canada, so strong that we have artists, activists, militants, premiers, some members of parliament, and mothers and sisters, brothers and fathers who are signing petition, are standing up for the family members who lost a loved one. And that, for me, is action.
All right. And we also want to hear about action that is going on in your community. You know, is the dialogue on missing and murdered Indigenous women something that tribal leaders have picked up? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Wahb, you know, several movements have happened this year in terms of the dialogue on missing and murdered Indigenous women. You know, what are some of the key points that you think have really got people talking and thinking about this issue, especially how many lives it's impacting?
Well, I think that the number that we're at right now is it's about 1,184 missing and murdered women. So basically 1,200 since 1980 in Canada. And what that means is that for an Indigenous woman in this country, they're about four times more likely than women of other backgrounds to be the victim of murder or to go missing. In terms of what's happened to bring this issue to the forefront, I think that, you know, I guess there's two things, really. Like, one is that it's predominantly due to the continued advocacy and the continued attention that Indigenous women have put on this issue, particularly people such as Michelle Odette. I'm not sure how aware your audience is, but Canada, she's been one of the most consistent and foremost voices putting attention on this issue. And of course, there's other Indigenous women in similar roles across the country doing similar work. For instance, here in Manitoba, which is just north of Minnesota and North Dakota, we have women like Leslie Spillett and Bernie Smith. And of course, there are others. Christy Belcourt, who've really pushed this issue to the forefront. However, there's always been a certain amount of skepticism or ignorance on the part of the media in covering this as a really, you know, urgent, pressing social issue in this country. However, that changed in August of this year when there was a young woman by the name of Tina Fontaine, 15 years old, who was found in the river, the Red River here in Winnipeg. And it was clear from the way that the police discovered her that she had been murdered. And something about this young girl, the fact that she was, you know, such a small little person with so much of her life ahead of her, you know, so innocent in the way that she looked, really struck a chord. And it really resonated beyond just the Indigenous community, and it outraged people from all walks of life in this part of the world. And for some reason, you know, Tina Fontaine, her death, her passing, seemed to be the catalyst, which all of a sudden took all that work that people such as Michelle and others had put and put it at the forefront of the national agenda, and at the top of mind for the political class in this country. So now in the time since, basically over the past 6 or 7 weeks, it's really been one of the most pressing discussions in the world of politics. You know, like, is there a need for a national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women? What are the causes? What are the potential solutions? Well, why is this happening? How do we keep women safe? All of those things have really started to come to the forefront since that happened in August.
And Michelle, what do you hope, you know, this time, you know, will really do for getting the message out there that, you know, maybe our women aren't safe? What do you think, Michelle?
Well, I strongly believe that we are not safe, regardless where we're living, for many, many sad reasons, but also for the vulnerability that we're in. And it's not a choice. Some of us didn't decide that we want to be in a poor neighborhood. It's because context and situation that are putting us there. And it happened to all of us. My niece disappeared. Thank God we found it back 36 hours. But we have friends, we have colleagues, we have workers who are affected by that, who has no answer yet. And it seemed like with this current government, the conservative government, is trying to divide this social movement that I was telling earlier, where that huge wave of citizens, of people, of militants are saying enough is enough. We're saying that we need a national public inquiry. We need also a national plan of action where we would bring all level of government, municipalities, and important groups, family members, to work and eradicate the violence that we're facing every day. Yesterday, we met with the president of the Canadian Association of Chief of Police, who was against an inquiry. And since the dialogue was started yesterday, first time, and it won't last there, won't stop there, we agreed that any initiative that the Native Women Association of Canada will put forward for members, for women, for men, for our son also, they said that they will participate or support. So it's a big change. We're isolating slowly and slowly the Prime Minister of Canada. We're anxious for the next federal election because we know the opposition, NDP and Liberal, made this as a strong commitment if they become a government. So we believe that if Drag the River in the Red River in Winnipeg is an initiative, NWAC believe it's important. Where we're sad, though, it's that the municipality, from maybe something changed since last week, but it's volunteers, people putting their lives in danger to find any evidence that would help to have a closure for their loss. And then you have provinces who will throw the ball to the federal and back and forth. So we're saying any initiative is worth, and everybody should get involved. And that's what brings me every morning proud to work for the Native Women Association of Canada, because I know, like, Webb is a strong advocate, and it's a man. So it's a role model for our sons, for our spouses, to say, be part of that change, be part of that solution.
All right, Michelle, thank you for that. And also to remind our listening audience, you can also join the conversation. And I'll ask that question to you, too. Do you feel our Indigenous women are safe in our communities? What about in outside communities? And what do you think of what you heard so far about the dialogue happening in Canada? Is a similar one happening in your community? Or is it time to dialogue about this? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Michelle, you know, what needs to be done? You know, what are First Nations communities asking of the government to do something about this?
There's two major things that need to happen. We know that the missing and murdered, it is sad. How can I say? It's a result of multiple layers of problems, social issue, systemic discrimination, and so on. The list is long. And the majority of the women that we lost, the young girls that we lost, it often happened off the reserve. So that's one of the strategies that we need to work with the police force, the municipalities, the provincial government, and so on. But let's not forget also, and there's not a lot of us who says what's going on in the community. Not that I want to blame our leadership, not that I want to blame the men in our communities, but I want to say that the violence, all form of violence is also happening in our communities, and we know the root cause: residential schools, Indian Act, extreme poverty, lack of housing, and so on and so on. But from that, what's going on? How come the federal government is not helping us to change the present and the future of our families in the community? Those two are very important.
All right. And for you, Wob, what do you see are important issues to, you know, really bring up when we talk about what can be done?
Well, I think the inquiry is badly needed. I mean, we want action. We want an action plan. But in the absence of an inquiry, the decision on what forms of action are taken are going to be made by politicians. The one thing I know about politicians is that they're always going to put forward the ideas which benefit them the most at the next election, not necessarily the ideas which will benefit the people we're trying to help here, which is to say young women and girls. So I would like the independent experts to come together in the form of an inquiry and set the course, which we can use to evaluate the progress and the programs and the laws and policies that the politicians put forward. So that's one. On the side of the indigenous community, I think that we have to look internally and ask ourselves if we are doing everything we can to be good fathers, good husbands, good brothers. Are we doing everything we can to be good mothers, good aunties, good sisters? We should look to the wisdom of our ancestors. If we're Lakota, we should consider what it meant to live in a Teochpaye. If we're Anishinaabe, we should consider what it means to have the phrase "Indinuimaganitok," all of our relatives, all those we presume to be our relatives. And we should use that as direction to inform the way that we work in the broader community, because it's true that a lot of the challenges faced by, you know, young indigenous people, they are systemic. They are a result of, you know, continued discrimination levied against our people, either by individuals or by, you know, the structures of power in our society. But at the same time, we can't ignore the fact that a lot of the harm is being caused by people from our own community. Like when I think of the young women that I know, like when I think of relatives of mine who were sexually abused, that wasn't the government that came in and did that. That was somebody from our own community who did that. And until we face up to that truth, we're not going to have a full satisfactory explanation and ability to form an action plan as to what's happening here. Because I'm a firm believer that facing the truth will always make you stronger. So what I'd like to see the Indigenous community, the First Nations community, do is to really have that open conversation and say, okay, we need to make sure that our young people know that they are loved and valued and that we care about them, not just to survive, but to thrive, to succeed to their fullest potential. And, you know, start working backwards from there. What can I do today to help make young people more resilient? What can I do today to make sure that, you know, the young women and girls in my community are safe? And until we have that, we should be committed to working and doing whatever it takes to bring that about.
All right, Wob, thanks for sharing that. And again, we are inviting you to our conversation. Today we are talking about the missing and murdered Indigenous women. We're hearing a Canadian perspective, but we know this is an issue that Native communities face here in the States as well, and other communities around the world. And so call in, share your thoughts on this. And if you have any questions for our guests, you can call in and ask. And, you know, are you feeling a connection to this issue and want to share your support? You can call into 1-800-996-2848. And Wob, you are also a journalist. And so from the perspective of the media, you know, what kind of grade would you give the media in covering this issue?
Well, up until August, I would have given them an F, seeing as how it is, you know, this, it's this inequality in our society, which is unjustifiable to ignore, and yet the media did ignore it by and large until Tina Fontaine's passing. Since then, the media coverage has picked up dramatically. The young woman, Tina, she was on the cover of the newspaper of record in Canada, the Globe and Mail, for 3 days in a row. And she was on the cover of the Toronto Star, which is a paper with the biggest circulation in Canada. You know, the issue has been all over social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know, it's been on all the broadcast news outlets. So I would say that the media attention has increased dramatically, and that is a good thing on balance. Where I still think that there is a challenge with the media is that there is an ongoing bias in the mainstream media with regards to coverage of Indigenous people. And part of that has to do with, I guess, the predilection towards covering negative stories. And so there's always a focus on, you know, negative stories from the Indigenous community. And while this is a challenging story, like, I think there are a lot of examples of people who are doing phenomenal things to build resiliency amongst our young people and make sure that young women and girls are safe. And I don't see much of that coming through in the media coverage. And the other thing is that the media, by and large, lets the federal government dictate the agenda for how this issue is debated. So really, the community has been saying for a long time that an inquiry is one of the crucial pieces to this puzzle. However, the federal government has succeeded in shifting the conversation from being one completely about an inquiry to now being one about this action plan that they've concocted. So I think there's a bit of a knee-jerk sensibility amongst a lot of reporters, and that allows them to get distracted from pursuing the real issue here, which to me is, you know, how are we going to make things safer in a way that is depoliticized and free from political interference, but rather is focused strictly on the outcomes that are going to bring about good things for young women and girls.
All right. And when we do think of the media, I've also noticed in social media, there is a lot of movement and dialogue, and a lot of people are starting to talk about this too. And maybe you first started hearing about the issue in Canada through social media. We want you to call in and tell us, you know, what was it like to find this kind of news on social media and maybe not even finding it in the headlines? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And here with us today, we have Wob Canoe and also Michelle Odette. And the both of them are giving us a Canadian perspective, but we know you might have something to say too. That's why we've opened up the phone lines. We're going to continue this discussion. We're going to take a break here. But, you know, if there are questions you have or things you are relating to, give us a call. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. And do you think it's just the same here in the States? And would you like to see more attention brought to it? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can also reach out to us on social media. We're at 1-800-99-NATIVE on Twitter. We're going to pause for a moment to tell you what is coming up tomorrow, but we'll be right back and our phone lines will remain open. October is the month when all the skeletons come out. Have you ever wondered how your own bones work? Join us on the next Native America Calling as we answer your questions like, why do our bones pop? We'll also share facts like how many bones are in our bodies and what foods are best for keeping our bones healthy.
Sacred Wind Communications education nonprofit, Sacred Wind Community Connect, is a proud sponsor of this program. Sacred Wind provides high school and college scholarships and internet training to areas of the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico, where the parent company provides voice and broadband services. Sacred Wind believes that broadband technologies can reinforce Native cultures and offer other opportunities for self-determination. For more information, log on to sacredwindcommunications.com. By the renovated Anchorage Marriott Downtown, one block from the Denina Convention Center and close to restaurants and shopping, welcoming AFN attendees and their families. For booking information, 1-800-228-9290 and mention AFN.
If you are a Native American, there's one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native business. Vote on November 4th. It makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Let your Native voice be heard. Vote for our people, our land, and our future. Go to nativenews.net for more information. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. And today we are focused on the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women, both in the U.S. and Canada. And right now, Aboriginal leaders and nations in Canada are talking about how to achieve justice for victims and give closure to families who have lost loved ones. From what we've heard so far, do you think enough is being done? What do you think about the Canadian government's response? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. And Native women in the U.S. are also missing from the circle and are among the hundreds of missing and murdered. And do you think the U.S. government is doing enough to prosecute or even solve these cases? And do you think the federal government should do more to address this issue in our communities? What about tribal leaders? Again, the number to join the conversation is 1-800-996-2848. And we have Michelle Odette, president of the Native Women's Association of Canada today. Also with us is Wab Kanu, journalist and also a recording artist. And I want to thank both of them for being here and welcoming them back. And Wab, we know a lot of movement has happened on social media, including the Save WEOP mapping project, where missing and murdered Indigenous women are put on a map where you can see, you know, where this is happening, and they put updates on there as well. Wab, anything you want to add about, you know, how social media is also getting the word out?
Well, I think social media has played a big role in bringing this issue to the forefront of the national public conscience, because, you know, it was ignored by the mainstream media for too long, and also because geographically, you know, this country is immense, right? And it's a relatively small population spread out over a huge area, and that's particularly true when it comes to the Indigenous community, right? Like, there's probably, you know, maybe 1.5 to 2 million Indigenous people spread out across a landmass bigger than the United States of America, right? And so because of that, social media has really been one of the key tools for connectivity, for sharing information and getting the message out, even when maybe the more traditional avenues have been closed.
All right. And any hashtags, you know, you look into, Wab, when you want to hear what the people have to say?
Well, hashtag MMIW, right, which stands for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. That seems to be the main one. But then there was also a hashtag Stolen Sisters, which was related to an art project that Christy Belcourt, Stolen Sisters was an initiative of some of the NGOs. And then there was Walking with Our Sisters, which was a part of the art project that Christy Belcourt launched to bring more attention to this issue. So, I mean, If you want to look on Twitter and research it, then I'd suggest starting with hashtag MMIW.
All right. And did you just say hashtag? What is that? Well, basically, when you log on to Twitter, if you write, you know, hashtag, which the pound sign and the letters or the word that Wob just mentioned, you'll see all the posts that people are commenting on. It's one way to do a quick reference search. And a lot of people are using it. There you go. There's your lesson for the day. You know, if you're logging on right now and you're surprised at what you're reading, call in. Tell us about it. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Evan in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He's tuned in on KUNM. And Evan, you got a question for us?
Hi, yes. My question is there a pattern or a more dominant pattern than other patterns of women who are going missing? Are they hitchhiking? Are they going missing right when they leave their jobs? Are they going missing from social environments? Just something. And then the other element is, do you feel this is an organized set of predators who are taking Native American women?
All right, Evan, thank you for your call. Michelle, can you help us with that?
Yeah, well, we tried to see if it was or if there is a pattern, but the pattern that we were able to collect over the years when we did the database, it was young girls, mostly around 15 to 18 years old. And compared to what the Canadian population thought for a long time, and still it's that thing that they were all women on the street, prostitutes. And what we were able to bring the light or the difference of what people thought. Yes, BC, Vancouver, downtown east side, it was vulnerable women, women on the street. How do you call women who has no roof, live outside? I forgot in English, sorry. Or prostitute. But when we look across Canada and also northern British Columbia, very dark, young, dark hair. So we're saying also today, since 2003, 2006, the numbers are increasing. Very, very scary. Every month we see a young girl or up to seven young girls missing or found dead here in Canada. And it's been like this since 2006. But we cannot connect them to one person or organized crime. But when you hear on CBC a former Gang Street young man who says Aboriginal young girl were our target because police or the justice system or social services care less for them. So it was easier for us to target them for human trafficking, prostitution, or whatever.
All right. Thank you for that. And Evan, thank you for your call. And, you know, what are your thoughts to what you just heard? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I know a lot of coverage I've seen or just personal stories are coming from families who are sharing their story about their loved one and, you know, just sharing how they are a part of the community. And so it's interesting to hear what you just shared, Michelle. My knowledge of this is coming from people sharing their own story and, you know, relating to these stories as that could be somebody very well from my own community or hearing their stories and seeing the reflection of different Native women I know. And, you know, it's really alarming. If you'd like to share your thoughts, you know, what are you witnessing? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. And I want to go ahead and turn it over to a person who knows this issue very well. I'd like to go ahead and welcome Eileen Joseph to our electronic talking circle. She's the mother of Shelley Lynn Joseph, who was murdered in 2004 in Canada. And Eileen is Tuscarora from the Wolf Clan, and she lives on the Six Nations Indian Reservation in Ontario, Canada. And Eileen is also part of Sisters in Spirit. It's a group for family and friends whose loved ones are missing or have been murdered. I want to go ahead and welcome her to the hour. Welcome to Native America Calling, Eileen.
Let's say go.
And Eileen, we appreciate you being here with us today. And what would you like to start off with about what it really means, you know, when we hear these numbers? What is the reality when someone you love goes missing or becomes one of these numbers?
Well, it was it's something you never get over. My daughter was one of the reserve residents, girls who did not like living out on the reserve, and she was one that moved into the city to find a better life. She struggled. She was always in violent relationships, and after she was murdered, it's something you don't ever get over. It's always with you. She was a good person who just tried so hard to keep her family safe and fed and clothed and in school, and it just seemed like nothing she tried ever worked. And I think that's what's wrong with our society. You know, when our girls go to the city, you know, they don't know where to turn.
Go ahead, Eileen.
It's just, she just didn't know what, like I heard Wobbs say that, you know, our girls have to feel loved and wanted. And that's the, although she knew her family loved her, she just kept searching for something else, which she never did find. I remember the day the police came into our driveway with all the cars and the victim service workers, and it was her youngest daughter's 16th birthday. And, I'll remember that day forever. You know, I've heard people say, get over it. You know, it's all over with. And, you know, you don't need to keep bringing it up. And, you know, it's time to forget about it. But you don't forget about it. And, you know, when this Tina Fontaine was murdered, I sat on my porch for hours. You know, when all the old emotions that I had from the beginning, they all came back. And, you know, she was such a beautiful girl.
Sure. And Eileen, I'm going to give you a moment. I know this can be very hard to talk about, and it is one of the hardest things a parent can ever think about or imagine. And I really appreciate you sharing with us. And I'm giving you a moment, Eileen. I wanted to give, you know, a moment to really think about how all of this connects. And while, you know, hearing Eileen, you know, how does all of this connect?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to honor, you know, Eileen, and, you know, say, you know, I hear you. I hear your pain. It's a very difficult situation, very difficult experience. In terms of how it connects, I mean, when we think of the challenges that our communities face across North America as Indigenous people, as nations like Anishinaabe or Tuscarora or Okanagan, which cross both sides of the border, we can think of them in two ways. We could think of them as many different issues, whether it's violence, it's murdered women, it's substance abuse, it's political disenfranchisement, it's economic development, or we could look at it as all being symptoms of one larger problem. And we know the cause of that problem. It's the process of colonization and dispossession of Indigenous people from our lands and from our traditional ways of life. But the challenge for us is, how do we respond to that? How are we going to respond to that? And for me, the answer to all of those problems, whether it is the one we're discussing today or one that we're talking about on another day. It's really about investing in young people so that they care enough about themselves to lead a healthy, fulfilling life, and then care enough about their communities to give back. And of course, like my personal view is that the best way to do that is to provide them with access to their culture and to have them with a safe space. But to me, yeah, like, I mean, we're talking about missing and murdered Indigenous women, but we can't ignore the fact that it occurs in the context of a very long history of marginalization, dispossession, and colonization of the Indigenous peoples of the Americas.
All right. Those things definitely connect. I got a phone call we're going to. You can also join the conversation, 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're going to Giselle in Canada. She is tuned in online. Giselle, what would you like to add?
I was interested in hearing some thoughts on a concern that was recently voiced about an inquiry by Dr. Sarah Hunt. I don't know if you're familiar with her work, but she's from Vancouver Island, and I believe her nation is Kwakwaka'wakw, and she's written quite a bit on this subject and recently raised some concerns about, I guess, the inquiry or the way in which such an inquiry would be done, especially funding-wise and given the fact that there have been, you know, after the Amnesty International report, there were quite a number of recommendations that were made that were not very well followed up on by the Canadian government. And just wanted to hear some thoughts on the inquiry and your thoughts on how you feel that might go with our government.
Okay, thank you for your call, Giselle. Wob, anything to add?
Yeah, there's a lot of skepticism about an inquiry, and basically a lot of it boils down to people fearing that this is just going to be another report, one that gets ignored later on. But I would say that there's a few reasons that we ought to stay committed to the idea of having a national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women. One is that there have been a lot of reports and a lot of research done into the issue, but it's clear to me that the politicians have not read those reports and have not taken into account the information that's presented. I'll give you an example. So, for instance, a lot of the politicians speaking publicly about this issue, they say, well, some of the solution has to come from First Nations people themselves, and then they make an implication that, you know, it's, you know, husbands killing wives. Well, we actually found out through some of the research, some done by the National Police Force in Canada, the RCMP, that First Nations women are less likely to be murdered by their spouses than are other women. So there's something going on here that's a little bit more complicated than I think we would assume at first glance. Now, I'm not saying that domestic violence is not an issue. No, of course, it is an issue in the community. But that is not what we can point to as being the sole cause of this phenomena, right? And what it tells me is that the people who are in decision-making positions have not paid attention to the existing research on the subject. So we need a better body of research, a stronger report, and one that they commissioned themselves, I think, would be one that they are more strongly tied to. The other issue is that it would send out the recommendations, a benchmark by which we could measure the progress that the politicians make, right? And so if there's experts coming together and defining what is the action that's needed, then all of a sudden it's depoliticized a little bit, right? It's not just conservative politicians saying it's about law and order, and then it's not just progressive politicians saying it's about social spending, right? But it's probably going to be some combination in between. So putting it into the hands of the experts for a bit, I think, depoliticizes the process and makes it consequently more likely to bring about positive results for Indigenous women. So those are a few of the thoughts that I had on the subject.
Okay, got a caller we're going to go to. We're bringing in Carl in Anchorage, Alaska, tuned in on KNBA. Carl, your thoughts.
Yeah, thank you. Angutlayok is my traditional name. I guess I'll start from a big picture. It's a reflection of colonization, and Mother Earth is definitely suffering. As caretakers, you know, of not only Mother Earth and our families. And as a man, I have to say that, I think all of us in Alaska have experienced our family, especially women, that have been targeted with violence, that have been murdered and missing. And one of the problems we're seeing here lately is killed women in the correctional facilities here in Alaska. Governor Parnell should be rejected from the political process with his lack of action to address the correctional facilities killing Native women. And then there's, I've had a lot of others that have had their children missing and not investigated. So those are problems that cannot necessarily be done overnight, but collectively, I think, both in Canada and the United States and in respective regions.
Sure, there's a lot we need to look into. And Carl, I do appreciate your call there in Anchorage, Alaska. I want to go back to Eileen Joseph, who's on the line with us today, too. And Eileen, we hear this term tossed around a lot, just forget about it, move on, go on from the past. But is that part of the reason that we just want to forget about it and sweep it under the rug when it comes to this issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women?
I think it probably is. It hurts me, and I imagine it hurts everybody else. And nobody wants to think that it can ever happen to them. I never thought it would ever happen to my family. But through all of this, I have been with the Native women and the Sisters in Spirit now for 10 years since my daughter was murdered. And, we've met so many people from across Canada that have had murdered and missing family members. And I have to say, a lot of the stories are all different. Some talk about the police who would not do anything, Some of them had to go out and do their own searching and for their missing families. And, it's not something that we ever forget. It's like I said a while ago, when Tina Fontaine died, it was like bringing up my daughter's death again. And I'm sure for all the murdered families, it's the same for them. I was just in Maniwaki 2 weekends ago for our the Maisie Ojik rally that they had there. They had a walk there, and she's been missing for 6 years, and every year they have a walk, hoping she's going to come back. We got there late. We didn't make the walk at all. But no, we don't get over it. We don't ever get over it, and we don't want to put it back behind us. We go to these rallies and we go to these walks because we get strength from each other.
And Eileen, when you are connecting with other families who can relate to you in this way, what is some of the dialogue? What needs to change? What needs to be done? What would you like to share today?
We don't need to be pushed to the side. When my daughter was murdered, we had friends that you would see at the mall, and they would see you coming and they would look the other way, or they'd walk by and act like they didn't notice you. And it's like we're here. We like to tell our story. We can do it. And it's not something we're ever going to forget. you can still be our friends, you know, without, you don't have to go and hide somewhere because you don't want to hear or you don't want to see us or you don't want to feel our pain. We can talk decent to you, you know. We don't have to talk about it all the time. We will always, it'll always be with us, and we'll always remember everything. We will always remember her. But people that shy away from us because they don't know what to say to us, you know, they don't have to say anything.
Sure. And Eileen, I think you bring up a very important part of this conversation too, the families and how they are facing this too. Michelle, we got about a minute before we close the hour. And I'd like to end with, you know, any message you'd like to send to parents who are struggling or and families who are dealing with this too. Go ahead, Michelle.
Well, we know that behind each statistic, we're talking about a real person, a person who was a daughter, a sister, or a mother. And for us, that's unacceptable. So October 4th, it's a special day that where we honor the family members, the loved one that were sold. And for us, broken future, it's unacceptable. So we do walk beside the family. I do.
All right. And while we got about a minute, anything you'd like to leave us with?
Well, one of the things that I'd like to see happen in the Native community over and above our calls for justice from the government and the broader society is for us to change the way that we speak about one another and change the way that we think about our sisters and our, relatives. Recently, I challenged, you know, Native hip-hop and rap musicians to stop making music with language that's derogatory to women. Something that I've been guilty of in the past. And so, you know, I apologize for that and want to turn over a new page because that does play into the way our young people think about relationships and women. And I think we could think about it in the political realm as well. How many of our leaders are, you know, the type to, running around and, leading a promiscuous lifestyle? What sort of message does that send? Well, how many of our leaders, sort of keep their spouses off to the side and don't really celebrate them to the extent that they could in the public sphere, thereby sending the message that a committed relationship is a healthy one and the way to go for the Indigenous community. So I'd like to send a message to everybody out there to consider, you know, what you can do on a personal level to send a message about healthy living and healthy relationships to the young Indigenous people.
That's going to do it for us today, Wab. We are at the end of the hour. Great message to leave us with. I appreciate all the folks who joined us today, Eileen Joseph, Michelle Odette, and Wab Canoe. And you can continue to get in touch with us after the show at NativeAmericaCalling.com or send us an email at comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. Our executive producer is Sarah Gustavus. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Andy Murphy is our associate producer. Stephen Emmons is our engineer. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. We'll be back tomorrow.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.